Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, April 22, 2022. Kenyans mourn the death of former President Mwai Kibaki.
Emilio Mwai Kibaki was a quintessential patriot whose legacy of civic responsibility will continue to inspire generations of Kenyans.
And the authorities in the contested Abyei region say families displaced by fighting in the area need help.
There are no shelters. Those who got small plastic sheets have erected them for shelter, but the situation is bad.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Former Kenyan President Mwai Kibaki, who served as the country's third president from 2002 to 2013, has died at the age of 90. Kibaki was very instrumental in ending Sudan's 21 years of fighting between the former rebels of the SPLA and the Sudan government. Kibaki, late Dr. John Garang and Ali Osman Taha signed a comprehensive peace agreement that brought an end to conflict in Sudan. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta announced on Friday the death of his predecessor, President Mwai Kibaki, who was 90 years old.
Emilio Mwai Kibaki was a quintessential patriot whose legacy of civic responsibility will continue to inspire generations of Kenyans long into our future.
Kibaki served as president from 2002 to 2013, winning election against Kenyatta and ending four decades of one-party rule. He came to power promising to fight corruption and transform Kenya's economy. While Kibaki ushered in economic reforms, corruption continued. His disputed re-election in 2007 against Raila Odinga, who accused him of rigging the outcome, led to the street clashes and the deaths of more than 1,100 people. But Kibaki was also hailed in 2010 for shaping Kenya a new constitution and improving social services. President Kenyatta praised the late president for transforming the country.
The late former president's administration conceptualized and spearheaded transformation in crucial sectors such as education through the globally lauded free primary education program, infrastructure developments in transport and energy, and the increasing the availability and access to healthcare for his fellow Kenyans.
At the end of two terms, Kibaki handed power to President Kenyatta, who was elected in 2013 and retired from politics. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Authorities in the Abyei Special Administrative Area say people displaced by intercommunal violence in the area are in dire need of humanitarian assistance. The head of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Abyei says more than 2,000 families displaced from four different villages need urgent help. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
At least 41 people were killed and 26 others were left injured last week after a group of suspected armed men from the Sudanese Miseria community attacked the Kolom, Nong, Dokura and Amiet villages in the Abyei administrative area, according to authorities. Abyei resident Bar Mayuen says his family was displaced in Amiet and are camping out in the open in a place called Kolom. Mayuen says internally displaced person lacks food, shelter and medicine.
There are no shelters. Those who got small plastic sheets have erected them for shelter, but the situation is bad. It has rained once and we expect more rains this time. Weather is odd. Weather is odd during the day and become cold at night, which is a problem.
The head of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Abyei, Santino Deng, says more than 2,300 families who are displaced by violence in Abyei area villages are sheltering under harsh weather conditions.
Amiet alone has 1,716 households, equivalent to 8,580 individuals. Nong has 225 displaced households, which is equivalent to 1,125 persons. Dokura has 199 households, with 995 individuals, and Columbs has 250 households with 1,250 individuals. We discussed with the partners the issues of water, food, medicines, and sanitation, because we are approaching the rainy season, so we hope they might intervene soon.
Sudan's top military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, last week formed a 7-member panel of top military, police and public prosecutors to investigate the root causes of the years-long conflict and to figure out how to end the violence. Most Abyei residents are South Sudanese Dinka Ngok, but the Sudanese Arab Masriya Heda tribe also inhabit the area during certain times of the year. Sudanese Masriya Paramount Chief Mukhtar Babo Nimir admitted men from his community attacked Abyei, but he said they did so in self-defense. Addressing the United Nations Security Council on Sudan and South Sudan yesterday, the U.S. representative to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, said the long-term solution to the Abyei conflict can only be worked out through diplomacy. Greenfield said the U.S. government encourages Sudan and South Sudan to renew diplomatic efforts to achieve a peaceful and mutually acceptable resolution of Abyei's final status. She also said the U.S. is, quote, deeply concerned about the recent violence clashes in Abyei in February and March, and thanked the UN for quickly reacting to restore order and increasing patrols. Ajak Deng Mien, a spokesperson of the Abyei Special Administrative Area Government, says calm has returned to the area following last week's deadly violence, but says traders are not able to move supplies from neighboring Sudan due to insecurity in Abyei.
The flow of goods is very weak up to now into the market. You know, as a refugee chain market, some are coming from Sudan, most of the goods, and some are coming from the south. Those who are going to buy. So now, the flow of goods into the market is still difficult. The situation is very hostile. But the movement between market and Abyei is there and South Sudan, but it is very slow.
For months, Abyei area has experienced waves of violence between the Ngok Dinka and the Sudanese Masriya Arab nomads, despite efforts by the governments of Sudan and South Sudan to resolve the matter. Last month, the U.S. advised the UN Interim Security Force for Abyei or UNISFOR peacekeepers to use all necessary means, which includes the use of force when required, to protect civilians under threat of peaceful violence in Abyei. UNISPA has a mandate to protect civilians under imminent threat of physical violence, to protect the area from incursion by unauthorized elements, and ensure security. UNISPA said in a statement last week it arrested a dozen suspected Masriya attackers and seized their weapons. The disputed region of Abyei straddles Sudan and South Sudan's borders. Its status remains unresolved as the two governments have not been able to agree on its boundaries ever since South Sudan declared its independence from Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
As the world is being consumed by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, relations between the United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan and the leaders of the Sudan's Sovereign Council is tense. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the head of the Sovereign Council, threatened to expel the UN Special Representative in Sudan, accusing him of interfering with the country's affairs and violating his mandate. Joseph Segley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explains to VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi the reasons behind the tension.
This seems to be a further sign that the military is not serious about a transition to civilian democratic rule in Sudan, as the military had committed itself to at the start of the transition process in 2019. UNITAMS was set up in 2020 to be an honest broker between the civilian actors and the military to try to facilitate a smooth transition to democratic government in Sudan. And you know, over the years, especially since the military coup in October of 2021, you know, there's been a sense that UNITAMS has bent over backwards to try to accommodate the military. And even when the military was clearly trying to derail the process, UNITAMS was engaging them and trying to find a way to keep them on board in a dialogue. So, you know, UNITAMS has been exceedingly neutral in this process. So this latest criticism and threat on the part of the Sudanese junta against UNITAMS is clearly an attempt to intimidate the United Nations to go along with the military's effort to maintain its hold on power, despite, you know, the opposition to the military by the vast majority of Sudanese, which we continue to see protesting on the streets.
Fadi Al-Qadi, the official spokesperson for the UN mission, said its activities in Sudan are based on Security Council Resolution 2524, and their mandate covers four strategic objectives: assist the political transition, progress toward democratic governance, protection and promotion of human rights, and sustainable peace. Could the UN mission achieve these objectives in Sudan?
I think they can. In fact, we had seen up until the military coup of October 2021, there was a notable progress in the transition. You had a civilian prime minister and cabinet, and they were undertaking reforms, and they were trying to fix many macroeconomic problems that Sudan faces. They were dealing with the other serious challenges, trying to put in place a system for a democratic political structure. So, you know, the UN was playing a useful role by creating a neutral forum for dialogue between civilians and the military, and, you know, trying to help navigate this power sharing arrangement. So I think we can say that, yes, it's possible. You know, during the civilian-led process, we saw Sudan negotiate debt savings agreements, foreign investment, foreign assistance with international actors. This is critical to Sudan's stability moving forward. Sometimes it's an underappreciated degree of crisis that Sudan is facing because of the decades of macroeconomic mismanagement by the military. The economy is contracting. The country faces 350% inflation. And this was even before the global inflation that we've seen. You know, debt is on track to grow to $1.2 trillion by 2025 because of the irresponsible spending on the part of the military government. All of these problems or issues we saw in 2019. So these aren't new. And it's only with a civilian government that you're going to see stabilization in Sudan. And you know, the UN has been a part of trying to get there.
That's Joseph Segley, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking with VOA's Senior Analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, authorities in the Sudanese capital Khartoum impose new laws on the use of motorbikes in the city. Find out more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your family take care of an elderly relative?
Once in a while, we sit down with him, speak with him, ask him how he's doing so he doesn't feel lonely. Then we also tell him about what is going on in the world so that he doesn't feel left out.
We make sure we provide the basic needs like food, water, make her happy, not to feel rejected. Because when they are growing and you start to abandon them, they see that they are not needed. And showing them love even brings them healing.
Helping them with the domestic chores, for example, preparing meals for them. Helping them with the clothes, cleaning up the house.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some residents of the Sudanese capital Khartoum have welcomed a decision taken by the Khartoum state authorities to regulate the use of motorbikes in the capital. Khartoum's acting governor, ordered a ban on any motorbike user from carrying passengers. Some residents say the move will reduce theft and kidnapping allegedly committed by motorbike riders. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The order prohibits anyone who rides a motorbike to carry another person with him on a bike. Those who violate Khartoum Acting Governor Ahmed Osman Hamza's decree face a 100,000 Sudanese pound a fine, 2 months in prison or both. The order comes after months of drive-by thefts, including snatching of bags and phones by motorbike drivers. He said the authorities also formed a force of police, military and national security officers who patrol Khartoum's main streets day and night to combat criminal activity. Khartoum's Hajusuf resident Sousan Salim, whose phone was snatched by people riding a motorbike last December, welcomes the new order, saying it will allow citizens to move freely while carrying their belongings.
They snatched bags, phones, money and anything in your hand. If you are along the main road at late hours, your life will be in danger. So I think the government's decision will make them scared a bit.
Salim says people are scared to even pick up calls while they are sitting in a bus because criminal activities are even worse around bus stations.
If you pick up your phone at a bus station or along the road, your phone will definitely be snatched. Drivers and bus conductors keep on reminding people about that. If you handle your phone with negligence and if they snatched it, no one will go and follow them.
Another Khartoum resident from the Mayo neighborhood, Awadia Abbas, says the order is long overdue. Abbas says she hopes authorities enforce the order, but points out not every motorbike driver is a criminal.
We have been victimized most of the time, even though we cannot generalize that anybody riding a motorbike is a thief. I have a son who owns a motorbike, but he uses it for his transportation to go to work or carry his children and go for a visit. We only need to identify who the thieves are.
Abul Ghassim Hamad, who uses his motorcycle to carry carpentry equipment, welcomes the order, saying it will regulate him and other motorcycle users to drive responsibly. Hamad says these incidents are becoming too much nowadays and we are even scared of moving on the main road with our motorbike. But now with this order, he says, I'm not going to carry anybody on my motorbike. I fully supported this move. The motorbike should only be for a single person, Hamad says. Cases of thefts, burglary, night robberies and looting have been on the rise around Khartoum in recent months. Some residents attribute the increase in criminal activities to the ongoing economic hardship across the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in our news. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Several of you wrote to us about our coverage of the recent deadly fighting in Unity State's Lur County, such as Mobor Aladrimo from Rombek in Lake State, who says, "Hello, VOA. The issue of Lur County of Unity State is a threat to the revitalized peace agreement. Therefore, the government and the SPLM in opposition should make a quick intervention. It is sad to see innocent citizens dying while there is little hope for peace since the formation of the army's command structure has been completed. My condolences to the families of the deceased who were killed this week. May their souls rest in peace." Gatiek Chibagai says, "Hello VOA, I am surprised about the looting of the MSF facility in Lur County by armed groups. Stop looting the property of your people and tomorrow when you are sick or you are injured, they will treat you there. I want the South Sudan government to intervene to stop those who continue looting MSF medicine. They should be arrested and taken to a court of law." Thomas Kuntoj in Old Fangak Payam of Jungle Estate says, "Hello VOA in South Sudan in Focus. I am tired of hearing of fighting everywhere in South Sudan for no reason because our two leaders are in one office in Juba right now and you are still fighting for what? You need to value your life as do other human beings around the world. May God bless South Sudan." Samuel Remo Inye says, "Hi John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. If South Sudanese citizens who had sacrificed their lives because of this country would wake up to be alive and see what is going on in the country, they would regret the mistakes they have done. I'm appealing to our leaders to give peace a chance to prevail." Someone who did not leave their name writes, "Good evening, John Tanza. I am disappointed about the roaming of the cattle in Central Equatoria State. We need solutions to de-escalate tensions between farmers and herders as it is the rainy season." Saber Isaac Hamiz of Yambio in Western Equatoria State writes, "Hello, VOA South Sudan Focus. The decision of the warring parties to unify the command of the organized forces is a plus to their revitalized peace agreement. Now it is time for touching the crucial part of graduating the first batch of unified forces who are at the training centers. We need peace to prevail in South Sudan so citizens can lead productive lives." Mading Malwal Alwong from Malakal Town writes, "Politicians are so evil that it becomes political violence. They organize other people's children. But when it comes to government appointments, business opportunities, and other big benefits, they organize only their own children and relatives. Don't fight your fellow soldiers or anyone because of politicians. Remember, they beat war drums. They are depending on you to unleash violence against your own struggling countrymen, not their children. Refuse to be used to participate in violence." Arob Mawien Malek from Juba says, "Dear VOA, as His Holiness Pope Francis is coming to visit South Sudan on July 7, 2022, I humbly anticipate that he will grace our land, the young nation, and change the hearts of self-centered leaders. I hope the Pope's visit to South Sudan will insinuate God's physical presence. Since he unprecedentedly decided to kiss South Sudan leaders' feet in Rome, I pray that his second decision to shuttle peace will change our hearts and enable us to abandon violence, hatred and corruption, and instead focus on nation building as South Sudanese." Lino from Juba writes, "Good evening, John. We, the citizens of South Sudan, are confused with these high prices in the market. The prices of food items have gone higher. Private schools keep on increasing their fees yearly. When will this be controlled? If the government has managed to control the dollar rate in the market, why are prices going higher? This question goes to our government." Jacob Dior Machueng from Rumbek in Lake State says, "The call by the Ugandan government for both countries of South Sudan and DRC Congo to support the refugees living in Uganda is right, but in South Sudan there is no conducive environment for refugees. If the IDPs in South Sudan are not able to leave the POCs, how will the refugees get the support from the government?" Henry Thunder from Uganda writes, "My message to my fellow South Sudanese is that we need to cooperate with one another for the growth and development of our country. Thank you." Albino Sunday from the University of Juba says, "I couldn't expect that from South Sudanese in the diaspora to search the incidents of killing them, as we are finishing in the hands of rebels and hunger." Finally, Robert Nyombe in the Bidibidi Refugee Settlement says, "Hello, VOA. I like listening to your broadcast during the week. Many thanks to the whole team. Keep up the good work." And we thank all of you for your comments. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. Keep those comments coming.
Keep your comments brief, and we will sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Next is an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States reiterates its grave concern over continuing reports of ethnically motivated atrocities committed by Amhara regional authorities in western Tigray, Ethiopia. Many of these are documented in a recent joint report by Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. In particular, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price in a statement, "We are deeply troubled by the report's finding that these acts amount to ethnic cleansing." Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch's report concluded that newly appointed administrators in the Western Tigray zone, as well as regional officials and security forces from Ethiopia's Amhara region, are responsible for a campaign of ethnic cleansing, as well as crimes against humanity and war crimes, targeting Tigrayan civilians in Western Tigray since the conflict began in November 2020. Spokesperson Price noted that thousands of Ethiopians of Tigrayan ethnicity reportedly continue to be detained arbitrarily in life-threatening conditions in Western Tigray. "We urge the immediate release of any such remaining detainees and call on relevant authorities to grant international monitors access to all detention facilities. It remains our firm position," said Mr. Price, "that there must be credible investigations into and accountability for atrocities committed by any party to the conflict as part of any lasting solution to the crisis. We urge the government of Ethiopia to cooperate with the UN Commission of Experts on Human Rights in Ethiopia. Continued reports of atrocities underscore the urgency of ending the military conflict. The United States supports the declarations of a cessation of hostilities by the government of Ethiopia and the Tigray Regional Authority and welcomes the news that they have been followed by initial convoys of life-saving assistance. In keeping with these declarations, the U.S. renews its call on all armed actors to renounce and end human rights abuses and violence against civilians. The United States reiterates its call for all foreign forces to withdraw from Ethiopia, as well as for the regional state authorities to remove their security forces from neighboring regions. Spokesperson Price urged all parties to take necessary steps to ensure the cessation of hostilities, unhindered and sustained humanitarian access, transparent investigations into human rights abuses and violations by all actors, and a negotiated resolution to the conflict in Ethiopia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end this show with Mawa and the song Binia.
Reaching out to the brokenhearted, I'm reaching out to the lost souls, I'm reaching out to the absent-minded, I'm reaching out to the sick and alone, I'm reaching out to the brokenhearted, I'm reaching out to the lost souls, I'm reaching out to the absent-minded, I'm reaching out to the sick and alone. Ana bimiru idatai, bijuru ita, kanita waga. Ana biguna guna tai, bijibu fara, kangel pawaja. Ana maderi tageni barao, ae, ana bija. Ana maderi tageni peki, walele, ana bija. Ana maderi tageni kore, yamami, ana bija. Ana maderi tajere sambala, ae, ana bija. Binia, itaya umatai. Binia, itaya ukutai. Binia, itaya jena.
We have been listening to Mawa and the song Binia. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
By your side, day and night, and I ain't never gonna let you go. When the night's getting dark and cold, Kelita Arugali anabija. When you're all by yourself at home, Kelita Arugali anabija. Ana maderi tageni bara, ae, anabija. Ana maderi tageni peki, walele, ana
bija ana maneri tange nikore ya mami ana bija ana maneri tajere sambala ae ana bija binii